Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to the press conference for the new Civil Rights Project report entitled Connecticut School Integration Moving Forward as the Northeast Retreats. During the presentation, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. Afterwards, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. At that time, if you have a question, please press star followed by the number one on your telephone. I would now like to turn the conference over to our speaker, Gary Orfield, Support Arthur, UCLA Research Professor and Co-Director of the Civil Rights Project.
Well, it's a pleasure to release this report today. This is the 10th in a series of reports that the Civil Rights Project has done on the process of segregation and integration in the Eastern Seaboard in the areas going from all the way from Maine down through North Carolina. We wanted to do this series of reports because we feel this issue has been neglected in the speech, and the statistics on segregation are very dismal, a deepening process of racial isolation and economic isolation in the schools of the region associated with very unequal educational opportunities. What we've seen nationally, and we've been issuing reports on segregation ever since the Civil Rights Project was created 18 years ago at Harvard, moved to UCLA in 2007. Our reports showed that the country made a great deal of progress on school integration, particularly for African American students, from the time of the great civil rights laws of the middle 1960s through the middle 1980s, when desegregation reached its peak for black students. Since that time, there have been some major Supreme Court decisions that have produced the dissolution of desegregation plans in many of the big cities in the country, and very little leadership from either the courts or the national administration on this issue. And segregation has intensified in almost all regions, for both African American and Latino students, who make up a rapidly growing proportion of the total enrollment of the United States. We have done reports on Connecticut's neighbors in New York, Massachusetts, New Jersey, and so forth, and we show these trends going on in those states. What is important for us in this report is that we show positive trends in Connecticut, and it's the only place we're seeing those on the Eastern Seaboard. And we think that there's important lessons from Connecticut for the rest of the country. There's been a loss of leadership by federal courts and agencies since the 1980s, but in Connecticut there's been a very important process of leadership through state constitutional laws interpreted by the Connecticut Supreme Court in the Sheff case that was originally filed back in 1989, and the Supreme Court made a decision in 1996. In the Connecticut case, basically the court asked the elected branches of government to come up with a remedy, and it moved slowly, but by 2003, some important ways of implementing desegregation were beginning to take hold using voluntary methods. People in New England tend to think about desegregation by thinking about the violence that occurred in around one Boston high school 40 years ago. For a very long time, there have been much more successful experiences in different parts of the Northeast, in places that have intentionally used choice processes in a positive way to produce integration. Choice doesn't automatically do this. As you'll see, the choice schools, that are charter schools in Connecticut, are highly segregated by and large. But choice linked to appropriate civil rights policies can make a difference, and it clearly has made a difference in Connecticut. Connecticut has two forms of choice that are central to this remedy: regional magnet schools, voluntary inter-district transfers. And those have made a substantial difference, especially in Hartford, where the most serious effort has been concentrated. I'm just going to walk you quickly through the report, and then I'll be happy to answer any questions. If they're complicated statistical questions, I'll turn them over to my colleague, Joy E., who will be willing to answer you online about any particular questions you might have about data issues. Basically, what's happened in Connecticut is that the state has changed. It was an overwhelmingly white state and with very, very small minority of non-whites back in the 1960s. In the last 25 years, it has experienced more than a doubling of Latino and Asian students, basically a stable percentage of black students in the state and a significant decline in white students. These are reflective of the national trends and basically reflect birth rates and migration patterns in the United States. The share of students living in poverty has increased dramatically in the last 15 years from 19% to 36%. Also reflects national trends, although it's not nearly as poor as the nation as a whole, since Connecticut is a rich state, with some concentrated poverty populations, largely non-white. What we see in Connecticut is a significant gain in on two of our measures, particularly black and Latino students in intensely segregated schools and black and Latino students in what we call apartheid schools, where virtually all students are non-white and almost all students are poor. The basic pattern in Connecticut before the SHEP remedy was high segregation by race and by poverty. And the pattern that is now showing in Connecticut, in distinction to the rest of the Northeast, is a lowering of extreme segregation. In the Northeast, in 2011, 51% of black students were in what we call intensely segregated schools. In Connecticut, in our 2012 data, 29% of black students and just 21% of Latino students, who are by far Connecticut's largest minority group, were in these intensely segregated schools. New York, your next-door neighbor, has the worst record in the country on this measure for both black and Latino students, with 65% of black students in intensely segregated schools. New Jersey is also much worse than Connecticut. And even Massachusetts, which has had a history of some desegregation activity, is worse and going in the wrong direction. So basically what we see in Connecticut is that the state is changing. It's becoming more diverse and it has a larger poverty population. And by 2010, about a third of the children being born in Connecticut were non-white. Predominating in that group were Latinos. What we see, if you have a copy of the report before you, if you look at figure 1 on page 25, you'll see black students in 90 to 100% minority schools declined from 36% to 29%, while the rest of the country was going up. The apartheid schools, the 99 to 100% schools, went down radically from 16% of black students to 4%. So those schools have been basically eliminated, most of the state except for a small number in Hartford. Latino students show a similar pattern and a more dramatic drop. They went from 34% of students in intensely segregated schools back in 1987 to only 21% in 2012, even though their population had soared during that period. And in terms of apartheid schools, they went from having 10% of the kids in those schools to having 1%. These are clear signs that a policy can make a difference, which is unusual in education policy these days. What we show in this report also is that in the country, segregation is related to unequal educational opportunities. Using Connecticut statistics on page 41, so that there's a clear correlation between graduation rates and segregation, and there's a clear correlation between test scores and segregation. This doesn't mean that segregation causes all these problems, but it is a striking relationship. What we're saying in the report is that what happened in Connecticut is a partial remedy. There has been a decline in segregation, but there's still some serious segregation in the central cities. Patterns of racial change are spreading into the suburban rings. So what we're recommending in the report is that we build on the success of the remedy and increase the parts of it that have really worked. Specifically, we suggest that all choice schools in Connecticut, particularly the charter schools that are now expanding with state funds, be subject to the same civil rights policies that the regional magnet schools and the voluntary transfers are. There is authority to do this in the State Board of Education and the Commissioner's Office, and it should be done since those policies have worked and had beneficial effects. The state capped magnet schools, new magnet schools outside of Hartford in 2009 while expanding charter schools. That's a mistake, and it should be corrected. There are opportunities to use housing policies in coordination with school policies that we recommend be explored more thoroughly. And we recommend that these opportunities for regional magnets be accelerated in outside of Hartford particularly. At the local level, we think it's very important for civil rights groups to be watching these issues and supporting this change, and especially looking at whether or not the pattern of racial change in the suburbs is spreading segregation into new regions and whether that could be avoided by more vigorous fair housing enforcement and other activities. We also think it's very important for school districts to know that any conscious action that has the effect of segregating white and Asian students who are in much less impoverished schools, less than a third of the poor kids on average, from black and Latino students could be a violation of civil rights laws and should be monitored. We're calling on the federal government to take supportive actions to support the kinds of things that have been accomplished under SHEF in Connecticut and to expand these kinds of efforts elsewhere. Although the Office of Civil Rights and the Justice Department have performed much better on this issue under the Obama administration, the Education Department really hasn't in terms of its basic policy. The Coalition of Civil Rights Groups have asked the Obama administration consistently to make this a priority in their various policies, and it has not yet happened. So we believe that there are major lessons in Connecticut for the country and that there are opportunities for Connecticut to build on them, and there are opportunities to expand these ideas around the Northeast and other parts of the country. So with that, I'll just conclude the presentation or overview of the report and be happy to answer any questions you might have or to refer you to other data.
To ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. That is star 1 to ask a question. Again, to ask an audio question, please press star 1.
Well, let me just describe a little bit more about what's in this report and what you might want to compare it with. There are detailed statistics for each of the metropolitan areas in Connecticut that look at a number of measures of racial isolation and isolation by poverty, which we call double segregation. There are also, on our website, a great deal of information about the country and the region and about long and specific reports about Massachusetts, New York, and New Jersey, which would be interesting to compare with the Connecticut data. Our website is civilrightsproject.ucla.edu.
And we do have a question from the line of Kathy Megan Hartford, Current Newspaper.
Hi there. Just had a couple of questions. One is the voluntary transfer program. Is that the open choice program that you're
Yes.
talking about there? Okay. And then maybe the other person asked this question because I was pressing the button and I couldn't hear what the question was. But is Hartford much better off than the other cities in Connecticut in terms of integration?
Well, I think that there are more integration opportunities in Hartford, and that is a real advantage, and Hartford wasn't subject to the 2009 moratorium on new regional magnets in other parts of the state. But on the other hand, Hartford has some of the most serious. Some of the most serious patterns of segregation, residential segregation.
And are you talking, is that partly about the charter schools in Hartford when you're talking about the most serious patterns of segregation?
No. There are remaining schools, as we see in the progress report to the state, like 42% of the black students in Hartford are in integrated schools under the definition in CHEF. That means the rest of them are not. And there are highly segregated schools and even apartheid schools in Hartford still remaining to be addressed. And that's going to be an important issue in the continuing negotiations between the state and Hartford. So very substantial progress, particularly in Hartford, but a remaining core of segregation that hasn't been addressed yet and that is subject to the next phase of this process.
Okay, and it's interesting because in Hartford there's been a lot of, at various state board of education meetings, a lot of parents from Hartford have spoken up because some of them are concerned that the magnet schools, which are, largely beautiful schools, they would like to see them admit more neighborhood kids because they have a better education and they want more of those opportunities available. It's kind of a catch-22 with some of this because I know in talking to people that run the charter schools, they want to serve as many kids in Hartford as they can rather than having kids from the suburbs bust in. What do you think about that issue?
Well, there's a goose that laid the golden egg issue here.
Mm-hmm.
Because people who see really good schools that are integrated by race, ethnicity, and poverty and economic status see a precious opportunity. And so they want it to be available to more and more neighborhood kids and poor kids and so forth. But part of that precious opportunity is the fact that there is a peer group and there are parents who have lots of resources who make those schools better. So the
mm-hmm.
integration is the opportunity in an important way. So if you don't have policies that make sure that it's actually integrated, it's not the building that creates the magic. It's the composition of the students and
right,
the faculty
right.
and so forth. So the right thing to do is to expand those opportunities, not to fight over who gets into them. Now, there's a lot of students on waiting lists who didn't get into these magnets. These magnets are successful educationally. The right answer is to build more of them, not to, fight over changing the composition, and especially not to do it in a way that diminishes the educational power of those schools, which really, to a great extent, comes from the diversity.
Mm-hmm. Although the state has no more money, they say, for magnet schools.
Well, they have money for charter schools without any civil rights requirements.
Right, right.
An issue that should be discussed by the public and the state.
All right, thanks. I have more questions, but I'll let somebody else go.
Well, we'll be happy to answer your questions as you think about them.
Okay.
We'll leave our contact information at the end of this call.
Okay, great. Thank you.
And there's no further audio questions at this time.
Well, then let me leave the contact information. You can send questions to me at orfield@gmail.com. Or you can call our office to schedule a discussion with me or Joy E. And our office number is 310-267-5562. 310-267-5562. All the other reports can be found on civilrightsproject.ucla.edu. Thank you very much. I hope that people will have many questions about this report and we will be able to answer them as they develop. Thank you.